Friday. That means that the program is on. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, behind the Sam Nation microphone here in the studios that we have deep behind the orange curtain, safely ensconced in Republican Orange County. Republican, at least for the time being. Look, if the media, and this is, I sometimes occasionally do this, so not just a show about politics, not just a show about current events, but I actually try to be helpful. And oftentimes to the very people I criticize. So I think, look, if you're a media person, the mainstream media, and you're devotedly anti-Trump and you are out there scoffing at the notion of fake news, what recommendation or tips do I have to give you? Well, for one, don't fall in a trap of totally misquoting and misrepresenting the president, because you're actually ultimately fulfilling his own prophecy that you're irrelevant, that you are biased, and that you have a narrative that is preconceived rather than one based on reporting the day's news. The exact example of this would be Trump's Wednesday remarks about MS-13. I had my friends, Ray Genoway, a good friend of mine, went to law school together. His mom is the mayor of Laguna Niguel here in Orange County, and she was there in the room. All right, delivered some remarks, but it wasn't Elaine's comments that got any traction. What it was Trump talking about MS-13, and the media went absolutely ballistic about it. You may have heard some whisperings about this during the week, and it was his animal comments. The audio's a little funky because they've got the guy with the boom, you know, the overhead mic. They're trying to get audio, but you've got to listen to the context of this. Because Trump is talking to a sheriff that's sitting next to him, Sheriff Mims, and they're discussing MS-13. And here is the exchange.
We'll take care of it, Monica.
Thank you. Why would there be an MS-13 gang member I know about? If they don't reach a certain threshold, I cannot tell ICE about it.
We have people coming into the country, or trying to come in. We're stopping a lot of them. But we're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals. And we're taking them out of the country at a level and at a rate that's never happened before. And because of the weak laws, they come in fast. We get them. We release them. We get them again. We bring them out. It's crazy.
Okay. So I know the audio is a bit shaky, but I'll go through it here just real quick. So Sheriff Mims of Fresno, California, is they're having a discussion about violent gangs, most notably MS-13, which is a Mexico-based gang that routinely uses our ridiculously loose immigration laws to cross the border to infiltrate the United States and set up shop here in the form of various criminal enterprises. And they are brutal. They don't just kill people, they torture people, and they kill kids. And incidentally, they're not killing people in my neighborhood. Okay, if you're a well-to-do professional, they're not killing people in your neighborhood. They're killing people and robbing people and destroying lives in the neighborhood of poor immigrant families. When you hear about MS-13 operating in Boston, it's not, you know, in the Harvard Common. Okay, when you hear about MS-13 operating in Los Angeles, it is not in Beverly Hills, it's not in Bel Air, but it's in poor immigrant neighborhoods. Trump is talking about MS-13 gang members. We'll take care of it, Margaret, he says to Sheriff Mims. We will win. And then Sheriff Mims still can't, putting in the word thank you. There could be an MS-13 member I know about as a sheriff, right? So there's an MS-13 illegal immigrant member that I know about. If they don't reach a certain threshold, I cannot tell ICE about it. So I know they're a gang member, and maybe they're not accused of murder. Maybe they're accused of a lesser crime, such as gang affiliation. And by the way, California has very strict gang affiliation laws. You know this? You can't even basically belong to a gang without getting arrested in California. But that particular law that we've put on our books that are very politicians that hate Trump, this is where the crazy doublespeak comes from. The same politicians that are trashing Trump as an animal and as a guy who's anti-immigrant are putting laws on the books that target predominantly minorities and prevent them from even legally associating with gang members. And these laws are on the books, but that doesn't raise, if somebody, for example, is charged with that crime, this sheriff in Fresno cannot escalate that person up to ICE. She is prevented under the sanctuary law from taking that person and saying, hey, ICE, hey, over here, we've got a guy who we suspect is an MS-13 member, and he's affiliating with MS-13 members. Yeah, we're holding him here on criminal charges that are totally legit, but we can't tell ICE about it. Now, I don't know where you stand on this issue. Common sense dictates that you get rid of this person, you eject these people from the country as quickly as possible. I don't know. It just seems logical to me. Trump's answer. We have people coming into the country or trying to come in. We're stopping a lot of them, but we're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals. And we're taking them out of the country at a level and at a rate that's never happened before. Okay. And this right now has prompted crazy, crazy responses. Here is Nancy Mini-Strokes Pelosi talking on Thursday morning, just outraged over the president's comments.
When the president of the United States says about undocumented immigrants, these aren't people, these are animals, you have to wonder, does he not believe in the spark of divinity, the dignity and worth of every person? These are not people, these are animals. The president of the United States. Every day that you think you've seen it all, along comes another manifestation of why their policies are inhumane.
This is not going to sell. It's not even going to sell with their core constituency groups, because I don't think look, Nancy, you live on, where does she live, Nob Hill or Pacific Heights in San Francisco? The homeless are too lazy to walk up that hill to poop on her sidewalk. Okay, that is how good Nancy Pelosi has it. And the Capitol Hill police that protect her private residence, okay? And the bars that she has on her window. Look, Nancy, you and I, we live charmed lives, okay? I'm going to put it that way. But the people that you rely on for votes that have been the traditional base of the Democratic Party are the ones that can call BS on everything that you're saying, every word that comes out of your mouth. They've witnessed the animal-like savagery of these gangs. They've seen people killed in their neighborhoods. You know, I have a colleague of mine, a friend who grew up in a gang neighborhood. He's a white guy who grew up in a gang neighborhood. He's seen bullet-riddled bodies in the driveway in the morning. I mean, it's normal. Hey, kill a guy, drop him off at his parents' house, and say, hey, don't mess with us. It's totally normal. Now, it may not be your reality, Nancy, and it may not be my reality here, or yours listening, but you know what I'm saying here. Well, Anna Navarro, I'll give you another example. Anna Navarro, she sent out this tweet. You know, she's a CNN commentator. She's their pretend Republican. Anna Navarro writes, Trump is in very bad company. Nazis referred to Jews as rats. Slave owners viewed slaves as subhuman animals. You know what the problem is here? For four years now almost, Trump very first kind of came on the scene and made some political waves. They have been deriding him in the most subhuman terms. I dug up this tweet. This is Anna Navarro, the same person who's saying this. This is back October 9th, 2016. So what do we have that? We have less than 2 years ago. Should Donald Trump drop out of the race? Yes, he should drop out of the human race. He is an animal. Apologies to animals. You've heard stuff like that said all the time. I mean, I don't have to, it's hardly unique. So two things are happening with the story that I think are very interesting. On one hand, it's terribly damaging to the media to continue reporting something that is so blatantly false and taken out of context. And that, of course, hurts the media and continues to hurt them. That's why CNN's 30% drop in ratings in the last 2 months. Look, they're hemorrhaging viewers because people are no longer interested in this. They see that it is a con. They see that it is a tired play, and they're bored by it. But the other part of this, there's a political angle to it, because as you are being told day in and day out that there is a blue wave coming in November, and I don't have, again, no crystal ball here. I don't know how it will play out. I think there's still a lot of we're not close enough to the election yet for me to make any predictions. And I may not be able to a week before the election either. But at this point, from what I can see here, it's my opinion that we have a problem for the Democratic Party. And the problem is a total disconnect from reality, right? Their reality has been trash Trump, run against Trump. But I have a question for you. What if Trump's policies end up becoming hugely popular with the very people that have formed the traditional base of the Democratic Party? What if poor people living in poor neighborhoods, what if immigrants living in immigrant neighborhoods are listening to what Trump is saying about MS-13 and going, yeah, he's right. And then in the same breath, they're listening to Nancy Pelosi, representative of the Congressional Democratic Caucus, right? If you look at the face of congressional Democrats, who are, you know, the people that are running in this election, right? The 2018 is not a presidential race. Trump is not running for re-election. Congresspersons are, right? Senators are. And if her, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer are both out there saying, how can you, where is the dignity of the human soul? How can Trump, I mean, if they are out there, at worst, misquoting Trump, but at best, misquoting Trump, and at worst, by the way, at worst, what is this? It's a full-throated defense of gang members. Look, every local race, we have one right now in Orange County for DA. Rakakis is running, the incumbent, he's being challenged by a guy named Spitzer. What is the entire election about? Gangs, crime, raw. This is what matters in these local constituent races, and congressmen, unless they're in Wyoming, are pretty damn local. What I mean by that, you know, well, explain, you know, Wyoming's a big state; they only have one congressman because it's a population thing. But in densely populated areas, which typically, by the way, lean blue, right? The more people you have, the more urban it is, the more progressive, you know, they're likely to be. Those races are those people care about crime. It's a big deal. And so you've got the Democrats right now running on a pro MS. Here's their platform. Vote for us because we love MS-13. We don't think they're animals. We think they're 100% redeemable. And by the way, we also, if you vote for us, we're going to raise your taxes. Yeah, I may not be any political genius. I've never run a national campaign. I've never run a local race. The last campaign I was involved in was in high school, and I lost it, okay? But I am an astute political observer, and I can tell you right now from my vantage point that this is a losing platform. If the economy continues to improve, if our standing, if our strength, our perceived strength on the world stage continues to go up, and if Trump continues to get misquoted and hammered by the media and is able to refute it each and every time, pretty much as this is going, then you're running against a popular guy. It doesn't matter how unpopular you say he is. It doesn't matter how unpopular Trump is in the CNN newsroom. All that matters here is what the public perceives. All Trump has to do is what Sarah Huckabee Sanders says. We'll play the tape. This is what Sarah Huckabee Sanders says about this.
What did the president mean when he said that some immigrants are not people, they're animals?
The president was very clearly referring to MS-13 gang members who enter the country illegally and whose deportations are hamstrung by our laws. This is one of the most vicious and deadly gangs that operates by the motto of rape, control, and kill. If the media and liberals want to defend MS-13, they're more than welcome to. Frankly, I don't think the term that the president used was strong enough.
Well, you know, when you factor in taxation and Planned Parenthood and all that good stuff, I mean, the rape, control, and kill is pretty much the Democratic Party. Okay, don't go anywhere. More on this and other stuff. Avenatti, he's, the porn lawyer. He's got some problems. I'll tell you about that. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Yeah, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, okie dokie. To illustrate one of the points I was making in the last segment about the media and overselling really this story about Trump calling immigrants animals. Last night, and I don't have the audio of it here. This is unfortunate. I was watching, I think, Fox and Friends. No, The Five, right, on Fox News. And that's where they have, well, they've got Gutfeld on, and they have, who are the regulars? Jesse Waters. And then they've got what's his face? Juan. What's his last name? Ah, well, whatever. Juan Williams, thank you. And Juan Williams, well, he's the resident liberal on that panel. And so they played the clip, the one that you heard here last segment, where Trump is clearly engaged with Sheriff Mims of Fresno speaking about MS-13. Sheriff Mims tells him, "We have this problem. We know they're MS-13 members, but we can't report them to ICE because of these ridiculous left-wing sanctuary state laws." And Trump goes, "We know they're bad people. These people aren't even people. They're animals. They're horrible." Okay, speaking very clearly about MS-13. So they play the clip and they go around the table, right? And everybody, you know, all the normal, logical thinking people at the table all say, "Well, yeah, I mean, this is really Trump should, you know, Trump didn't do anything wrong. He made it really clear. It was obvious. And he's being taken out of context." That's the conclusion. It comes to Juan Williams. Now, I understand that Juan has a role to play. But I'm telling you, if he's playing that role, whatever the reason is, even if he's playing the role, he really believes it. It's not good for the Democratic Party because he actually begins to defend MS-13 gang members. He says, in part, he says, "Look, every person, every human is redeemable." And by the way, I don't think that that is a uniform, predominant sentiment in the United States. We throw people away. We put people in jail for life. We execute people. Okay. We understand there are certain crimes that are irredeemable. When was the last time you look at the kid, you know, the kid up at Stanford, he rapes that girl, you know, the swimmer, Brock, I think was his name. Brock Turner, he rapes a girl. The judge thinks he's redeemable. The judge lets him out, and the judge is facing a recall drive. Now, people's souls might be redeemable. I'm not trashing that, but the justice system has a role to play. The justice system exists to hold people accountable for their wrongs, and certain wrongs disqualify you from living among us. And calling that somebody that, you know, violently rapes a child, kills them, slaughters them, all to as a revenge for their parents', you know, refusal to cooperate with the gang. This happens, by the way. This is what MS-13 is about. So to have Nancy Pelosi, Juan Williams, Anna Navarro, all these people, all these politicians, you know, left-wing Democrats, and their, you know, and their water carriers in the media standing up for them, they keep doing it. Keep doing it. If you want, if you trust me, if you're like me and you want the Democrats to lose, or at least not make any significant gains come November, then this what they're doing right now, we should strongly encourage it for it to continue and go down this path. Trust me. And they will, because they're so dumb. They do not, they live in their vacuum. All of this is happening because these people are the Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the media, they're all in an echo chamber. All they do is sit around and talk amongst themselves, and they are just slack-jawed in disbelief. How is it possible that Trump is president? They still haven't understood how 2016 is happened. If they can't figure out 2016, how in the name of H are they going to figure out, okay, how to handle 2018? These people. All right, when we come back, I want to get into Michael Avenatti. Interesting developments. In fact, something occurred that I suspected was around the corner. I spoke about it a few weeks ago. So now things are happening, and I want to talk to you about this. They're the problems, and they're not Trump problems, which is interesting enough. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here we go. Truth-telling to the powerful. Also, remember this, I'm very rarely wrong, but almost always right. Good combination, I think. Anyway, all right. Everybody having a good Friday? Yes? Good. I'm glad. I am, too. I'm actually excited for the weekend. It's been a good long week. Remind me to tell you about the field trip I went on yesterday. Somebody, my kids' elementary school decided it'd be a good idea to make me a chaperone. I'll tell you about that in the second hour. Okay. Avenatti Michael, the attorney, the California licensed attorney who's representing Stormy Daniels in her quest against Trump. Although, as I've explained many times before, I don't think it's really her quest. I think it's Avenatti's quest. So that put that issue aside for a minute. Avenatti is practically a neighbor of mine. He lives or has lived in the past in Newport Beach, California. And he's had a few different business enterprises. And none of them have gone particularly well. Okay, this is an interesting thing because I think that if you are going to take on an enormous amount of media heat, you're going to take incoming fire, okay? You're going to, right, I mean, people are going to eventually, after you make, you know, 200 appearances on CNN and get something like, I don't know, $100 million in free airtime, people are going to begin to ask questions, who are you? And some of the stink that is coming out is he was involved in, you know, Tully's Coffee. You remember that, Shane? Tully's. So he was a guy that bought it. He bought it with somebody else's money. That person never wanted their money to be used and was thinking that this thing was going to be self-financed. It was some Hollywood guy, an actor, Dempsey, I think. I think it was Dempsey, Patrick Dempsey. Anyway, so he buys the Tully's thing. He, you know, all these coffee companies, by the way, you know, they don't, Tully's doesn't roast its own coffee. They go to independent roasters, you know, small businesses and get, you know, blends of various coffee grounds. And anyway, $160,000 worth of coffee from this small business ordered by Avenatti and his crew. They never get paid. So the guy that doesn't get paid, his name is David Morris. The company is Delano's. And he basically goes on Twitter and says, here's the whole breakdown. Here's what happened. Next thing you know, his tweet is deleted and us replaced later by a tweet. Yes, no, that tweet was not taken out. I deleted it and I've come to an agreement with Mr. Avenatti. You want to know what that agreement was? Is that what you're wondering? I'll tell you what happened. Avenatti threatened to sue him for defamation. And Delano's, you know, a small business after, after first getting screwed out of $160K, does not want to get sued. They don't want to do it. So maybe he said, oh, look, I'll sue you, or here's $5,000 and go away. That's probably what happened. I'm just telling you, this is how these things work. And why do I think that? Because subsequent to this report coming out, we found out earlier this week that the California State Bar is investigating Mr. Avenatti, of which he is a member, for not paying payroll taxes. The media really doesn't understand the story very well, because I don't think anyone in the media ever has owned or operated a business, let alone been a lawyer, you know, just anything in the real world. So we're up against a break. I'm going to break this down for you, because this is not about paying or failure to pay income taxes. If I have to listen to one more person on CNN talk about lawyers, all these lawyers who don't pay their income taxes and all that, and of course, I do not disagree with them, but this is, they've missed the issue. So, okay, let's take our break early, because this has to be dissected. I want you to know everything you need to know about the subject and to understand how profoundly vulnerable Mr. Avenatti is and what could possibly happen. I'll give you, as always, my lawyer's take. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Michael Avenatti, the attorney that has been practically embedded in CNN's programming for the last 2 months, touting his client, Stormy Daniels, and her just terrible, sad story with Donald Trump. This guy has a little problem with the California State Bar. Let me explain it. Mr. Avenatti is accused of not paying his payroll taxes. So, you know, when you work for your employer. And today's Friday, for example. I don't know. Is payday for anybody? If it is, yay, it's payday. And then, you know, you get yay, payday, you know, and then you get your check and you open it up. And oh, yes. Ouch. Your check is all about the enormous, deductions taken out by the government in the form of taxes. Now, here's mechanically how this happens. Your employer or your employer's payroll company figures out what your salary is, figures out what your withholding rate is based on the information that you supply to them, right? And based on that, they figure out how much they need to take out of your check to send to the government. And they are required, every employer is required to do this, well, pretty quickly. And if you don't send it off to the feds and to the state, toot sweet, then you are facing criminal liability. Okay, this isn't like not paying your taxes and them filing a civil action against you. This is not the same thing as not paying your own taxes. Generally speaking, when you don't pay your own taxes, money that you owe, income tax, right? That's they're going to file liens against you. They're going to pursue you in civil court. That's the typical avenue. And you're going to negotiate, and they can't, you know, there's no debtor's prison for that, right? But if you don't pay other people's withholdings, that they consider theft. Very, very, very important. So the accusation is that is what Avenatti didn't do. Now, why do employers not pay those taxes? I'm just curious. Does anybody Can you guess? Oh, I can guess. I can tell you exactly why. It's tough running a business. And every business, no matter how great of a genius is running it, will run into cash flow problems. And this whole thing stems from the Tully's deal, from the Coffey's deal that went sour, so to speak, right? And so they ran into some cash flow problems. And, you know, if payroll, I'm just going to use a round number, if payroll every month is $1 million, but you can get away with, let's say, just paying $600,000, $500,000. And you're thinking in the back of your head, well, you know what? I'm going to have some revenue come down the road. And so by the time they come asking me for this money and I report all of it, I'm going to have it for them. Now, that's the thinking, right? Well, that's what they purportedly, or, you know, it's alleged that happened, right? They thought, you know, we're just going to pay this later. But they couldn't later because this whole enterprise blew up. So what I predicted would happen here, I predicted that Avenatti was getting a little too big for his britches, and sooner or later he was going to make an ethical misstep that was going to put him on the state bar radar. And I always thought that it would be something related to his representation of Stormy Daniels. Remember how I said it's, you know, he's purportedly her lawyer and looking out for her best interest. But I've always told you that this strategy is going to leave her high and dry. Trump has an enormous case against her right now, right? I mean, she broke the agreement. And incidentally, I don't know if you missed this, but did you see the financial disclosure that Trump put out? Trump filed his required government employee and politician disclosure form. Every elected official needs to do this. And in the disclosure form is the payment for Stormy Daniels that he pays to Michael Cohen, his embattled attorney. So this news comes out, and my reaction to it, if you must know, is, so what? Can we all move on now? Was there ever any doubt that Trump paid Stormy Daniels off and that what happened? And that is all a non-story. Okay, so what? All this proves to me is that Stormy got cash, signed an agreement not to speak, and is now violating the agreement. And there are consequences built into that agreement. Lawyers call those liquidated damages. So most contracts, by the way, when you have some kind of a deal, and in the deal, there are terms, and if you violate terms, either party, the agreement will spell out what the damages are. And if I recall, the damages are pretty onerous, like $1 million per violation. So every time that disgusting cow opens her mouth, it's Trump, you know, theoretically can go after her for $1 million. He literally can ruin her. So I think eventually, you know, and this is how state bar investigations work. Again, I know this. I'm a licensed attorney in California. I've seen it happen. The bar will open up an investigation into one thing, and all of a sudden it will start to look at other stuff. And I'm telling you, this is bad news for Avenatti. Bad, bad, bad news. And the people that always run afoul of the state bar think that they are smarter, think that they are better, think that they are indestructible. So Trump derangement syndrome and being a licensed attorney that wants to remain in good standing, those two do not mix well. Trust me. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
You know, I think there's a bit of fatigue, too, with all of this that is setting in that becomes a huge factor. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation. What do I mean by this? I Do you think that people are just generally sick of politics right now, more than they have been in a long, long, long time? The canary in the mine, so to speak, the metaphorical bird in the cage that they carry into a mine. If the bird drops dead, right, you know that they're nauseous gases and you get the hell out of there. So my test pigeon for this is my wife. She'll be really mad at me for calling her a test pigeon. But anyway, let me tell you, Sherry is very common sense, down-to-earth person who is leans conservative, of course, because I lean on her. But but she's sick of this all this stuff. She doesn't want to hear it anymore. Who cares? She'll hear something about Avenatti. She'll see Avenatti speaking on TV. Who gives a crap? Of course he slept. Of course, whatever. No, we don't care. I want us to be safe. I want our taxes to be lower. And I want some curbs to illegal immigration. That's literally her comments. You know, there was a very interesting exchange on this point, but not exactly on this point, but very illustrative of this general, I think, sentiment, national sentiment. When Seinfeld went and did his next Netflix show, interview show, David Letterman's new, speaking to, what is the name of his show? Oh, my next guest needs no introduction. So basically, you know, I'm David Letterman, and I'm only going to interview really famous people. Okay, so premise of the show. So he's got Seinfeld on, and the two, of course, know each other going way back. And Letterman, who can't stop trashing Trump, right? He asks Seinfeld about Trump material. This is so interesting. Listen closely.
Do you do Trump stuff when you go out?
No, it doesn't interest me. I do a lot of raisin stuff.
A lot of what?
Raisins. I have a lot of raisin material. Because, you know, you have the Sun-Made company. And then you have the Raisinette people.
Yeah, that's right. And you're going to go with the Sun-Made people.
Well, I just think it's interesting that after 80 years, Sun-Made finally went, hey, why don't we put some chocolate on it?
Uh-huh.
Like, imagine not thinking of that for 80 years.
Seinfeld is a genius. I mean, I know that I know he's a liberal. He is a devoted, he's an Obama fanboy. I don't know him, but I have an inside scoop on this. I know people that do. We have some close friends in common. And I will tell you this. He is an absolute liberal, but I don't care because he's not smearing my face in it on a daily basis. And this is why his show on Netflix is going to cream a Letterman's all day, every day. Because Letterman won't be able to help himself. Because they just stop themselves from talking about Trump and getting into it. And nobody wants to hear it anymore. Nobody wants to hear it. And Seinfeld, he's brilliant. I thought that was funny. All he's doing is talking about Sun-Made versus Raisinettes and raisins and chocolate on them. And why hasn't it? It's so dumb, but it's funny. So it takes more intelligence to talk about something insignificant and make it interesting. But it also takes good judgment, which is, you know, really the more underappreciated side of intelligence. It takes wisdom to navigate this political situation that we're in. And if you're a comedian, an entertainer, a musician, whatnot, stay away from the Trump thing. Stay away from politics. People can, if they want politics and they want to bash Trump, they'll go on MSNBC, they'll go on CNN. If they like Trump, they'll go on Sam Nation. And if they want to listen about raisins or whatnot, well, they're going to tune in to Seinfeld. There you go. Okay. Don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back. Where's our music? Where have I been? Who's been doing the show? Enjoy that little bit of behind the scenes here at Sam Nation. Producer Robbie, I have a chat in the hallway after this. Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves.
We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Just some breaking news as we do this podcast here Friday morning. Seems that there's yet another school shooting, this time at Santa Fe High School in Santa Fe, Texas. The police so far seem to be confirming at least 8 dead. There's some explosives or word of possible explosive devices located at the school and at a site somewhere off campus. And this is a developing story. So what do you say to this? Yesterday, I just had a great experience spending time with my son's fourth grade class. I mentioned it last hour that I'd somehow been picked to be a chaperone and take these, about 70 kids up to downtown LA to visit Olivera Street. We took the bus to the train station here in Irvine, took the train up to Union Station, and there were, we had 70 kids with us. And it's been a really busy week at work for me, and I really didn't have a day to give, right? I mean, I didn't have a spare day, and being out of the office wasn't what I wanted to do. But I remember I had this thought. And the thought as I was planning my week was this. I will never, if I go to work on Thursday and I don't go on this field trip, that is a day at work that a year from now I will not remember. I will not remember anything about that day. It will be an insignificant blip on my radar. And I thought, if I go on this trip, I will remember that day forever. And I was right in part and wrong, actually. It didn't have the entire whole truth to it. Because it really doesn't matter what I remember, what I took away from it. I don't think it's a day that my son will forget, because we got home afterwards and he just, by the way, when we were out there, before I even tell you what he told me at home, when we were up there and he's around all of his friends, right? In fourth grade, he's 10 years old and he's a big kid. He's getting older, and he's cool in front of his friends. We're crossing the street from Union Station across the street to where, Olivera Street is. And he takes my hand. He literally held my hand in front of his classmates. And I thought, look, that was a great, proud paterfamilias moment. Because I want my kids to always hold my hand. I don't know. I'm trying to hold on to that as long as I possibly can. So he gets home and he says to me, I ask him, did you have a great day? He goes, no, Dad. I had the best, most amazing day. And I am so happy today. I've got this bounce in my step. And when I hear this news of what's happening in Texas, as a parent, I think life is precious. And the time that I have with him is precious. The time that he has with me is precious. And it's finite. And one of us, one of us eventually isn't going to be here. And it's important to make memories. It's important to invest time. And it doesn't mean always every day, although I think there's no substitute for that. But if you can get away from work and go and be a parent chaperone, for example, or do volunteer at your kid's school, remember, you're not just touching your kid's life. You might, just possibly, you might touch the life of another kid. And I did that. I think I bonded with a couple of kids in the group that, You know, and who knows? Maybe I'll see that those kids in that group in a couple years when they're all going to junior high, and maybe they'll come over to my house and we'll be able to talk, and maybe, just maybe, I'll be able to tell something to this kid that will dissuade them from acting out. We all have a role to play, okay? And this isn't some Hillary Clinton BS about it takes a village to raise a child. This is real life family, community, and parenting. This is what it's all about. And being a good example, not just to your kids, but also in your community, is very important. You never know what life you're going to touch. And I wonder, you know, when we talk about the shooting in Florida that we now know certainly a little bit more about, and we get in the mind of the shooter, I just wonder where were some of the other adults? And he was taken in by a great family, and it didn't do the trick, but maybe there was somebody else that should have come along earlier when he was suffering with his mother. I don't know. But these are all important questions. So my heart breaks for these families that are suffering really an unspeakable loss today. And we'll talk more about this, I'm sure, next week as we begin to know more. All right. Well, I guess there's always politics we can get to. You know, did you hear about this Trump Tower meeting? The transcripts from the closed door investigation by the House Select Committee is finally coming out. And these transcripts absolutely have nothing in them. Thousands of pages of nothing. And I know it's nothing because the media right now has nothing to say about it. Byron York, writing in the Washington Examiner, he wrote a piece about, is the Trump Tower meeting really a proof of collusion? And I, you know what meeting this is, right? This is the dig up dirt on Hillary meeting. This is the meeting that Donald Trump Jr., and Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort took with a publicist, a guy by the name of, Rob Goldstone. And Rob Goldstone is a publicist for some Russian kid who's an up-and-coming singer. And the kid's dad is a Russian oligarch, is a Russian billionaire. So you've got a singing sensation young kid who wants to become a YouTube star or whatever. He's got a wealthy, rich dad who's funding this, who's hired this publicist. And they want to get a meeting with Trump. So what do? They say, we have got dirt on Hillary. Now, they go through all the emails. And one thing that the senators wanted to know here in the Judiciary Committee, they wanted to figure out what reasoning went into this meeting. What was their objective? And their objective was not to give dirt on Hillary because they didn't have it. It was a bait and switch. What they wanted was to lobby Trump to intervene in something called the Magnitsky Act, which is very damaging for wealthy Russians. It basically puts a lot of people in Russia on a no-go zone financially, and so they can't operate in the United States. They can't buy property. They can't move money around. It's problematic, okay? So wealthy Russians want to get rid of this thing called the Magnitsky Act. So they use the pretense of, we've got dirt on Hillary, and they go to Rob Goldstone, and Rob Goldstone explains in testimony, well, and with documents that are obtained via subpoena, what reasoning went into this. Listen to this. This is so fascinating. According to Byron York, quote, an answer came in a 2017 email provided to the committee. Shortly after the Trump Tower meeting was first reported in the media, Goldstone and Amin Aglarov, these are the singer, right, and the agent, exchanged emails on how best to address the story. Goldstone sent Aglarov a draft statement, said in the email he used the strongest hyperbolic language to convince Trump Jr. to take the meeting. Asked by the Senate what he meant by strongest hyperbolic language, Goldstone said, quote, that I had puffed it and used some keywords that I thought would attract Don Jr.'s attention. I mean, publicist puff is how we get meetings, Goldstone added. Okay, we all live in L.A., right? I mean, I'm Orange County. I'm a Rube. But you live in, many of you live in L.A. You know what L.A. is all about. Puff publicism is what L.A. is all about. This was a simple, we want to get in through the door and make a pitch, and we're going to dangle as many shiny things on our pitch to get your attention. That's it. Now, you have got to use serious imagination to get from that to collusion, right? Because collusion would, of course, be something more along the lines of a concentrated, focused effort, a joint effort, where Trump is working together with the Russian government. Working with some kid who wants to be a singer, his dad's an oligarch. I understand a lot of these oligarchs, they all have ties to Putin. So, you know, you can't really call these people private people versus, you know, agents of the state. They're all agents of the state. I get that. I understand that. But it's not some concentrated effort. And by the way, the meeting happened. They come in with their pitch and they go, oh, we got had. We got had. Get out of here, guy. This is not what we wanted. Get. Time to call. And they basically shooed them out of there. This is such nothing BS. We're getting stuck in the weeds of like one little meeting. And I know what, you know, I know what the apologists for all this say. They say, well, that's just one thing. I mean, there's other stuff. But every one of these things is hitting a dead end. Every one of these stories is turning out to be nothing. Who paid Michael Cohen the money to hush up Stormy Daniels? And remember, what did I tell you last week? I told you there is no way that a guy like Trump spends $72 million on his own campaign and then goes to some oligarch and says, hey, yo, Sergey, you want to spot me some rubles and I can pay off this bimbo over here? Yeah, how much do you need? Well, you know, I need like $500K. It's a guy that made $42 million off his just one hotel last year, $42 million in revenues. And he's having to like, you know, hey, brother, can you spare me a dime over to some Ruskies? By the way, as there are allegations, it was in real time, right? There are already allegations out there that there's Trump collusion. And the most absurd part of the story, if there's nothing else that you take away from it, is while the Democrats are turning something like this meeting into Trump Tower meeting with the Russians and it's collusive and this and that. As that is happening, rewind a little bit and you have Hillary Clinton, her campaign, literally going to Russia, paying agents that are associated with the FSB, which is the functional equivalent of the CIA, FBI, CIA, paying agents inside the FSB to work with Steele, right? Christopher Steele, the guy who authored the Golden Showers dossier, literally going to fabricating, spinning nonsense about Trump, then leaking it to Brennan, leaking it to other people inside the U.S. government, all Obama people, right? Of course, Hillary's an Obama person, too, right? She's Secretary of State during this time. So Hillary is basically leaking it internally, getting it into the hands of people who want to see her succeed in the election. And they use that dossier to try to sink Trump's entire chances of becoming president. Not only that, they then use that dossier that they got in with direct help from Russia, right? From Russian Secret Services, they take that dossier and spend the next, well, what has it been? How long has Trump been president? For as long as Trump has been president, they've been using that dossier to undermine and weaken his ability to operate and to, you know, get policy done. So this is how rigged this whole thing has been. And it ought to make you furious. And the only reason that it's still continuing is because the only reason this whole thing's going on is because Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, is just a wet noodle There's no other way to put it. He's a spineless twit. He is a politician who cannot get over himself, and he wants to be a Southern gentleman. If Trump had if he had an attorney general who was half as politically capable as Eric Holder was to Obama, none of this would be going on right now. This would absolutely not be happening. So, oh yeah, and the spy too. Did you hear about this? Yeah, there's confirmation from the Justice Department that they planted somebody inside the Trump campaign, that they had human intelligence on Carter Page and George Papadopoulos. And this thing is buried, by the way, in Thursday's New York Times piece about this. They just buried it somewhere in the middle. They wrote, that officials acknowledged the Bureau had used at least one human informant to spy on both Carter Page and George Papadopoulos. The Wall Street Journal did a big expose on this, and they dismissed it. You know, New York Times like, yeah, it's no big deal. No big deal. Can you imagine if it came out that Trump had placed – not even Trump. But this is – I don't even know let's say this. Let's say that Bush had placed a spy inside the Obama campaign. Oh, my God. We would still be hearing about it. It would be in textbooks. Kids right now learning U.S. history, preparing for the AP U.S. history exam would be writing about this. Such nonsense. Okay. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I think it's great that all of these transcripts now are getting released. I think as long as there is ambiguity about what happened, there are people, you know, what can you say if you don't know what went on in a certain conversation or went on with certain testimony? What do you do? You say, well, it could be really bad. It could be really damaging for President Trump. So I think the answer here is sunlight, daylight, whatever you want to call it. Bring it all to the forefront. Let's talk about it, because that's how you get to the truth. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Talking about the Senate testimony that was now released. It was done previously behind closed doors. All, I think, 6,000 pages of it are out. They're being poured over by hostile media. So far, nothing. Which tells me this is all about that really famous meeting where Trump Jr. took a meeting with Russians to get dirt on Hillary. And we were told this is a smoking gun right here. This is a smoking gun. It turns out it's not even a gun at all. Not smoking. And what it does is it destroys the narrative that you have been hearing, that you've been told by the media is the gospel truth. And reasons for why you shouldn't trust Trump. And we ought to get a special counsel, and we need to look into this, and we need to get to the bottom of Trump-Russia collusion. One interesting thing here, I think I want to draw your attention to, is that there was a translator there, because the female Russian, some emissary there, her English is poor. And so she had a translator, and his name is Samarachnov. And Samarachnov was in the room for the entire meeting, and he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, this is very interesting. Because he does not remember anyone bringing up the publicist's original email promising dirt on Clinton, right? So nobody – he doesn't remember Don Jr. or Manafort or Kushner saying, hey, guys, so we're sitting here. Tell us what you have on Hillary. Doesn't remember that. He doesn't remember anyone – mentioning any sort of information that might be provided in the future. So there's no future promise of anything like that. He doesn't remember anyone mentioning Hillary Clinton or negative information on Hillary Clinton. He doesn't remember any kind of future meeting. But he also remembers that Donald Trump Jr. said during the meeting, testified that if or when my father becomes president, we'll revisit the issue. And this has to do only with these sanctions. Now, foreign states, whenever we have an election, foreign states always want to talk, especially if there's two serious candidates, they want to ingratiate themselves with both candidates. Yeah. Obama, during the campaign, went to Germany, did a world tour. He gave speeches on foreign soil. He met with foreign leaders. You guys, this is nothing new. You have to always... The takeaway here is there are no special rules for Trump versus Obama versus Bush versus Clinton versus whomever. Foreign leaders meet with candidates. It happens. There's precedent for it, precedent that went largely unchallenged. I mean, when we said, why is Obama speaking in Berlin and meeting with, you know, the chancellor? What's he doing? Well, you know, oh, well, no, this is absolutely okay. And these same people are screaming bloody murder when it comes to Trump. So investigators asked what Samarachnov, this is the interpreter, thought Trump Jr. meant by that. Frankly, if you are asking for my reaction, this is a direct quote from his testimony, sworn testimony. It was a very polite way of saying, thank you very much. It's time for you to go. The meeting is over. And it was like the lady that they were talking to left the meeting disappointed. Three Trump officials were apparently unhappy that 20 minutes of their time had been wasted. And a year later, when news of the meeting broke, it became the most important 20 minutes of the Trump-Russia investigation. This is why it's a load of nothing. So when the next time somebody tells you and says, oh, Trump colluded with Russia and he had this, took this meeting in Trump Tower, you go, yeah, read the freaking transcript, you idiot, because nothing happened there. All right. Our Friday Funny segment is coming right up. You do not want to miss this. Friday Funny, always a great news story. And I've got a little twinkle of Kanye in this, which has nothing to do, well, sort of has something to do with the original story. But you just stay tuned. Hang on. Be patient. I will. I'm going to give you a load of nothing here in a minute. You'll see what I mean. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Okay, we don't have any music to start the segment with. Disagreements with producer Robbie. Okay, there, I did my own music to the new Friday Funny segment that we're going to have every week at this time. So, I don't know if you heard about this. You know the two guys who went into Starbucks, wanted to use the toilet, were told they could not. They insisted, were arrested, and next thing you know, Starbucks is apologizing all over themselves for being racist pigs. You remember that story? Well, in Canada, there is an entirely different solution to this problem. You can always count on Canadians to do things differently. They have a Tim Hortons chain up there. I don't know, you're probably not familiar with this. It's like a Dunkin' Donuts thing. It's pretty disgusting. But anyway, Tim Hortons up in Canada, they serve donuts, coffee, and other really bad food. A customer goes into one of their stores and demands to use the bathroom. Now, the employees there know this lady, right? And they know that she's a problem. She's been a problem in the past. And they do not let her use the bathroom. They have to give her a key or buzz her in or whatever the deal is to open the bathroom. So this lady takes matters into her own hands. And I mean that quite literally. She drops her pants and proceeds to poop on the floor of the Tim Hortons. It's all on video, guys. Every bit of it is on video. Now, the part that happens next. So, for example, if you've ever been at the zoo and visited the monkey exhibit, you'll be familiar with this skilled maneuver. This woman then proceeded to take a napkin and basically picked up her poo and began throwing it at employees behind the counter. She's lobbing her poopsicles at them. All this reminded me of that Kanye West has a new song out. I don't know what's it called? I had it. Wait, I was listening to it on iTunes on my way over to the studio. Wait a second. Stand by. Lift yourself. I can't make this stuff up. Lift yourself. Now, it all starts with this really, like, uplifting chorus singing music. We're all great, you know, trust in yourself, whatever. And then the song takes a turn.
This next verse, though.
Watch this.
No.
Whoop-dee-doo-scoop. Scoop-dee-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-dee-poop. Poop-dee-scoop-dee-scoop-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-whoop-poop. Poop-dee-dee-whoop-scoop. Poop. Poop. Scoop-dee-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-dee-scoop. Whoop-dee-dee-scoop-poop.
I mean, really? Okay, so now the Tim Hortons video has a soundtrack. Unbeknownst to her, this woman has actually created a perfect music video for this song. What the hell is Kanye doing? I don't look. Remember when I shared that bit about Seinfeld that you stay out of politics? The same is true for Kanye. You should stay out of politics and just sing. He's going a little nutty. But we're all talking about this song. I'm just saying it's in 1 week to have that song drop and then to have literally this woman drop her pants and start throwing her poo in a Tim Hortons in Canada. I thought Canadians were civilized. What is this? The world is going to hell, folks. Or to crap, I guess, is one other way of putting it. This reminds me, though. The Kanye song is actually an embodiment of how far we have regressed. Okay, if you want to be provocative by singing poop, whoop, dee dee, poop, scoop, poop, whoop, dee dee, scoop, poop, or whatever the lyrics are, all you're doing is just riding way behind on the coattails of the great Johnny Cash. Listen to this.
I've been washed down the sink of your conscience in a theater of your love. I lost my part, and now you say you've got me out of your conscience. I've been flushed from the bathroom of your heart.
Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
These bars.
Watch this.
No.
Whoop-dee-scoop. Scoop-dee-dee-whoop. Whoop-dee-scoop-dee-poop. Poop-dee-scoop-dee.
This is, by the way, not just lyrics good for the Tim Hortons video, but also if you have any video playing of the Hamas incursion in Gaza, this is literally what the Israelis were doing on the border. Poop, scoop, diddy, whoop. And the all hell broke loose. Can we just come back to this for a minute? I know it's ancient history in the week, but this is a rewind show. We go through the week and we get you up to speed. So in case you missed it, Trump unveiled the new embassy in Jerusalem. Well, Trump didn't. We sent the best of the best. We had Kushner there and Ivanka and some other dignitaries from the White House came. And Israel is over the moon, right? I mean, they are all right now, make Israel great again. We love you, President Trump. You're the best. And the Palestinians are all poop, whoop, diddy, scoop, poop. Because this to them is a disaster. It's a political disaster. They have been holding Jerusalem hostage as their bargaining chip, and Trump just crapped all over it. And that's what you do in a negotiation. When somebody wants something from you and it's yours to take, you take it. You take it. Because then potentially you have something to give back. You don't sit with it in an escrow account just hanging out, saying, well, this little thing over here that you want, and we want it, and I want it, and da-da-da-da-da, let's talk about it. You don't freaking talk about it. You grab it, and then you talk about it, negotiate later. And Trump understands that. That's what this move was all about, you nitwits in the media that think it's a... And by the way, what kind of a government... I'll tell you right now, it's Hamas. But what kind of a government has a problem with its neighbor about, you know, whatever, like we have with Mexico? And let's say we go, you know, Mexico, we don't like what you're doing. So what we're going to do is we're going to put, you know, send some kids. We're going to send them running across the border with, you know, with guns and with Molotov cocktails. And we're going to, you know, this is insanity. The kind of violence that occurs as is initiated by Hamas in Gaza is intolerable to any government. And you hear this, by the way, brilliantly defended by Nikki Haley on the floor of the UN. Listen to this.
They light Molotov cocktails attached to kites on fire and attempt to fly them into Israel to cause as much destruction as possible. When asked yesterday why he put a swastika on his burning kite, the terrorist responded, quote, "The Jews go crazy when you mention Hitler," unquote. This is what is endangering the people of Gaza. Make no mistake, Hamas is pleased with the results from yesterday. I asked my colleagues here in the Security Council, who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would. No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has. In fact, the records of several countries here today suggest they would be much less restrained.
Yes, and you've got under... I know this is very difficult to grasp, but Hamas wants dead kids. That's what they want. And they want it because it's a photo op, and it incites the kind of rage that you've heard from, you know, everyone from the Ayatollah down to Anna Navarro of CNN. The media right now has turned into the biggest bunch of anti-Semites I don't even want to use the word Jew bashing, but that is what is going on in the media. Have we not forgotten? Have we not? Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East that shares our values. Things like, you know, border sovereignty, for example. Well, it's not, apparently it's not everybody's value here in the States, but they're a democracy. They're stable. They've been on the, you know, they've been on the right side of issues like, oh, I don't know, you know, terrorism and September 11th. You know, not killing. Well, not killing gays. Yeah, that too. Yeah, people have gay rights in Israel. I mean, I'm sorry. Do they have those in Iran? In Palestine? In Syria? This is really, it's starting to get absurd. When we come back, I want to play for you what happened on CNN. Eddie Glaude just, I mean... Oh, was that MSNBC, the other crap network. You got to listen to this because you hear they are so emotional about what went down in Israel. And they're blinded. Trust me on this. They are blinded by Trump hate. Trump moved the embassy. Trump. And now everything that Israel does is a furtherance of the Trump conspiracy to ruin the world. And they are bordering on unhinged. Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere. More on this next.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, here we go. This is Eddie Glaude talking first about a midterm analysis, right? The midterm elections and politically speaking, what's going to be going on. And then he immediately begins to bash Israel. This is with Katie Tour. You'll hear her voice And they're also so the discussion starts off with the GOP strategist Susan Del Persio talking about the midterms. Listen to this.
So while Donald Trump is doing this and may look for a deflection, it's not necessarily going to help the midterms.
All of that's important. And all of those babies are dead. All of those people are dead. They're dead. And we're talking about racehorses. I mean, the politics. I mean, there are a lot of folks who are dead today. For what? I'm sorry. This is me being a moralist, I suppose.
No, I understand. And the White House today, their response to that was it is Hamas's fault, and they're using them as tools for propaganda.
That's like saying the children in the Children's March of Birmingham, it was their fault that Bull Connor attacked them.
We're going to leave it there for the moment. Eddie Glaude, thank you very much.
Ah! That's like saying the children in the Children's March of Birmingham, it was their fault that Bull Connor attacked them. Are you serious? Equating Hamas with the civil rights movement? You've lost it, my friend. You're done. You're done. You know what? Because to them, this is the real truth. These people on the left, some among them, are pure and simple terrorist sympathizers. They want, I mean, look, the Palestine, going back to Arafat and the PLO, have we not forgotten how many American lives they have on their conscience? It's a terror state funded entirely by Iran and Barack Hussein and Obama, too. I mean, don't forget that because, you know, I think what was it? Obama in the last week in office gave Palestine like sent them a bunch of our money. You know, we're struggling to pay taxes and Obama sent them something like, I don't know, a few hundred million dollars. Insanity. There's a video that I put up on my on Twitter earlier in the week. It shows the martyrs, right? The people that died in the senseless violence that Eddie Glaude talks about. So they've got all these martyrs. This is a big thing that they do because it's all about the photo op. So if you've got dead people, yeah, you line them up, you put sheets over them, you put some slogans on them, you know, martyrs and you killed by bad Jews and that kind of thing. And you parade them in front of the cameras. This is what the Palestinians do. Because they're just like the civil rights movement in the 60s. Yeah, well, the only problem with it is, and check out my Insta, I mean, not my Instagram, my Twitter, you'll see on @SamNation, you'll see the little video. And the there's a couple of the guys under the sheets are moving. They're moving. One of them, like, I think had a itch on his nose or something. And I, like, you saw his hand, like, creeping up under the sheet. And he's, like, got a booger or something he's got to pry loose. I don't know. They're not even all dead. I don't know. Maybe some of them were dead. But my point is it's staged. These guys, this is what they do. I don't know. I'm going to tell you, I think that this is this is another thing that is further going to destroy the Democratic base. Because if you think about, and I've never understood this, right? I never understood why so many Jewish Americans are so beholden to the Democratic Party. But the Democratic Party has no interest in protecting Israel. If we consider Israel as our friend and ally in the Middle East, Trump has literally exceeded all expectations as far as building a friendship and relationship with Israel. Yeah, I know. Yes, the liberation of Palestine, it's a national duty. It's the Arabs want to liberate Palestine. And they want Israel and every last Jew out of there. They don't want a deal. This is the biggest myth. They don't want a deal. They don't want to compromise. So why compromise with people that don't want to compromise? The only thing they respect is strength. And the best thing here is Trump's got that and then some. So bring on the strength, Trump. Just do it. Just, you know. All right, there we go. We've got outro music now. This is nice. Okay. Sam Rajosky, have a great weekend. I love you all. So grateful. Go to iTunes, tell a friend, show them how to do it, show them how to find us. Make sure, you know, friends don't let friends not listen to Sam Nation. See you next week. Soldiers, keep on-